Tonight, hours from power, the Trumps arrive in Washington. Pomp and pageantry as the president-elect prepares to be sworn in as the 45th president of the United States. High alert amid record security, roads and waterways on lockdown, a massive force across the nation's capital. Grilled on the Hill, Democrats unload on Trump's pick for Treasury Secretary, forcing him to admit his company foreclosed on military families. Resort avalanche disaster, many dead in a frantic search for dozens trapped inside the rubble of a snow-covered hotel. Trump's pastor, a rare interview with a woman often called Trump's spiritual advisor, who comes with a controversial history of her own. And father-in-chief to his kids and other kids. We go behind the scenes. Nightly news begins right now.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt, reporting tonight from Washington.
Good evening. The Trump era in Washington has begun. President-elect Donald Trump and his family arrived here from New York aboard an Air Force jet on this eve of the inauguration. The soon-to-be commander-in-chief laying a wreath at Arlington National Cemetery ahead of an evening of celebration that included fireworks. Tonight from the Capitol behind me, where Mr. Trump will take the oath of office and beyond, this city is wrapped in layers of security in anticipation of close to a million people hoping to either witness or protest the event. Our coverage begins with NBC's Kristen Welker.
President-elect Donald Trump touching down in Washington just hours before taking the oath of office, already surrounded by many of the trappings of the presidency, arriving by military jet to Joint Base Andrews, joined by wife Melania and all five of his children. His first stop, a thank you lunch for supporters, touting his new D.C. hotel, which bears his name.
Where is this? This is a gorgeous room. A total genius must have built this. Under budget and ahead of schedule.
And introducing the soon-to-be First Lady.
Would you like to say a couple of words?
It's great to be here, and thank you all for your support.
Then a more somber visit. His family still with him as he lay a wreath at Arlington National Cemetery. And tonight, walking down the steps of the Lincoln Memorial at a kickoff concert.
We are going to make America great again, and I'll add, greater than ever before.
In between it all, making final edits to his inaugural address, a speech aides call less of an agenda, more of a philosophical document, emphasizing the challenges facing the middle class, an attempt to unify a still deeply divided country. But tonight, questions about how inclusive his administration will be. With his cabinet now complete, there is some diversity, but no Latinos for the first time since 1988.
What do you say more broadly about the criticism that this undercuts President-elect Trump's argument that he is here to serve all Americans?
When you look at the totality of his administration, you see a president who is committed to uniting this country, who's bringing the best and the brightest together.
Top on Trump's early agenda, transition sources tell NBC News, taking action on immigration, reversing the TPP trade deal. And after Mr. Trump criticized the CIA's conclusion Russia tried to interfere in the election, intelligence sources tell NBC News he's aiming to visit the agency Saturday. Ivanka Trump also shedding light on her role, refuting speculation she will assume any duties of the First Lady.
Well, I think it's an inappropriate observation. There's one First Lady, and she'll do remarkable things.
President-elect Trump has one more event tonight, a dinner at Union Station, and then he'll spend the night at Blair House, right across the street from the White House, where he'll officially move in tomorrow. Lester.
Kristen Welker, thank you. And also here in Washington today, more of President-elect Trump's cabinet picks on the hot seat. Treasury nominee Steven Mnuchin came under fire during his Senate confirmation hearing. And Energy Secretary nominee Rick Perry had to explain why he wants to lead a department he once wanted to abolish. NBC's Capitol Hill correspondent Casey Hunt has more.
On Capitol Hill today, Donald Trump's pick for Treasury Secretary immediately on defense over his role in the 2008 housing crisis.
In the press, it has been said that I ran a foreclosure machine. This is not an accurate description of my role at One West Bank.
Former Goldman Sachs executive Steve Mnuchin ran One West Bank beginning in 2009, the height of the housing crisis.
One West is one big mess.
The bank foreclosed on tens of thousands of homes before Mnuchin sold the bank in 2015 for $3.4 billion. It's made him the top target for Democrats, sparking a contentious hearing.
Senator Wyden, I've got a Valium pill here that you might want to take.
And at today's hearing, Colleen Eisenhodroff. Weeks after her husband died in 2014, she says she got a letter from One West demanding she pay off their reverse mortgage or get out.
And we lived in the house for 54. That's a long time, and all of a sudden come along and they're going to take your house.
And pressed by Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown, Mnuchin also acknowledging foreclosing on military families.
We unfortunately did foreclose on certain people in the military. It was quite unfortunate.
Repeatedly apologizing.
I earnestly feel terrible for any mistakes at the bank.
One floor above that hearing, former presidential candidate Rick Perry, who once couldn't remember he wanted to abolish the Energy Department.
Oops.
Now saying he values the agency he's tapped to lead.
In fact, after being briefed on so many of the vital functions of the Department of Energy, I regret recommending its elimination.
If confirmed, Perry will oversee the country's nuclear arsenal, succeeding Ernest Moniz, a nuclear physicist. Perry's advisors today insisting he's up to the job.
Tonight, we're learning that Donald Trump is going to tap Woody Johnson, the owner of the New York Jets, to be the U.S. ambassador to the U.K. So he'll also face a Senate confirmation. That's considered a plum post for major fundraisers. Johnson supported Jeb Bush in the primary, but was a major backer of Trump's in the general election. Lester.
All right, Casey Hunt, thank you. While business goes on inside the nation's capital, outside Washington, D.C. has been transformed for the inauguration, with a security zone radiating out in all directions, on land, over water, and in the air. And this year, planners are especially worried about potential attacks from big trucks or even from drones. Our justice correspondent Pete Williams has details.
More than 100 blocks of downtown Washington are closed to traffic, with big heavy vehicles in place to stop any attacks by trucks, like those carried out last year in France and Germany.
That is a precaution that we are doubling down on, in particular, this inauguration.
The Coast Guard is enforcing a no-boat zone on the Potomac River, with extra security and eyes in the sky overhead.
Helicopters from Customs and Border Protection will patrol an expanded no-fly zone for private planes over Washington, 35 miles in all directions, twice the usual restricted area. This helicopter can also provide live video to law enforcement of trouble spots on the ground.
You don't even need the electronic map. You can look down and know what street you're over.
Secret Service agents have trained on responding to all kinds of trouble, from objects thrown at the presidential limo to people rushing past the crowd barriers. Robert Buster walked the inaugural parade route 4 years ago as head of the Secret Service Protective Division.
I heard somebody once say it's like riding a motorcycle, that when you stop worrying about it, that's when it becomes dangerous.
Yeah, I would say we never stop worrying. We're always going to have concerns. We start working early, and we what-if a lot. Not only do we what-if it, but we implement that into our training program.
Another new worry, drones, with more than 1.5 million now in the hands of hobbyists. Secret Service agents have trained for the prospect of one bearing an attack, but Homeland Security officials say they have the technology to neutralize them. Pete Williams, NBC News, Washington.
Meantime, authorities are bracing for protests, not just here in D.C., but in cities across the country. Hundreds of them are planned, and NBC's Stephanie Goss tells us more.
The inauguration is still hours away, but protesters around the country aren't waiting. Tonight in New York, a massive rally outside of a Trump hotel. In Washington, tens of thousands of anti-Trump protesters are expected in the coming days.
This is not just your normal transition of power here.
Hundreds of demonstrations planned across the country, some groups vowing to create chaos and shut down the celebrations.
We hope basically to set a tone of resistance for the coming years.
The largest protest tomorrow is set to take place here at the Navy Memorial. The event organizers tell us 20,000 people have said they're going to come on Facebook, although they admit the number will probably be much less than that. They have a bird's eye view. Just after taking the oath, the newly sworn in president will pass right by here.
The rallies will span days, the largest planned here on Saturday. 200,000 could attend the Women's March. It's expected to be a sea of pink, with protesters wearing these hats handmade by volunteers. Heather Lamb of Denver will be there, along with her daughter and 80-year-old mother, who made plans months ago to celebrate Hillary Clinton swearing in. She kept her ticket to protest Trump.
There's a part of me that wants to, you know, put my head in the sand for the next 4 years, but I don't think that you can do that.
The Bikers for Trump group has vowed to protect the new president from any anti-Trump protesters in the nation's capital. Planners are especially worried about keeping the peace among the different groups. The goal? Keep them separated. Stephanie Gosk, NBC News, Washington.
And we hope you'll join us as our special inauguration coverage gets underway tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific, here on NBC. We have an update tonight on the health of the former President George H.W. Bush. His spokesman says he remains in stable condition in the intensive care unit, suffering from pneumonia. His spokesman says there is hope he'll be discharged from ICU in a few days. Meantime, Barbara Bush is said to be feeling, quote, 1,000% better after being hospitalized with bronchitis. Overseas now to a terrible disaster in Italy, a sudden avalanche burying a hotel after an earthquake. Dozens of people trapped inside are feared dead as rescuers race to save anyone still alive inside. NBC's Kelly Cobiella has made her way to the scene.
Under this blanket of white, a frantic search through snow and debris for trapped families and hotel workers. The snow is 15 feet deep in places. Rescuers are digging their way in. This man, one of only two survivors so far.
It's pretty hard to work there. You need a lot of people. You need a lot of time.
The avalanche hit at 5:30 in the evening on Wednesday, so powerful it pushed the hotel 30 feet off its foundation, bursting through walls, breaking windows, blocking hallways. This man says his friend called him for help. He'd gone out to his car just moments before it hit, his wife and two children still inside. The first rescue teams didn't arrive until the next morning, the only way in on skis. The exact cause of the avalanche is unknown, but on Wednesday, four strong quakes in 4 hours shook central Italy, felt as far away as Rome. Some people in the area are in shelters tonight, afraid the ground and snow will move again. Doctors and supplies are being flown in. Rescuers say the hotel is unstable, and so far, no signs of life. At least two bodies have been recovered so far, but rescuers say they still have hope. They say the hotel is big, there could be pockets of air, and they'll search through the night as long as it's safe. Lester?
Kelly Cobiella, thank you. And staying overseas for a moment, tragedy in Iran. At least 30 firefighters have been killed after a historic high-rise building in the heart of Tehran caught fire and collapsed as they tried to put out the flames and rescue those trapped inside. The collapse was shown live on state TV. The bodies of more than 20 firefighters have been recovered. Still ahead, a rare one-on-one with Donald Trump's pastor. The woman often called his spiritual advisor, chosen to give the invocation at tomorrow's inauguration, but also facing backlash for her controversial preaching. Also on the Obamas' final night as First Family, a look at the president's role through the years as father figure in chief. When President-elect Donald Trump is sworn in here in the nation's capital tomorrow, the ceremony will feature controversial pastor Paula Whitecain, often called Mr. Trump's spiritual advisor. Some critics have slammed her as a charlatan, but in a rare interview with NBC's Ann Thompson, Whitecain defends her message and offers insight into the president-elect's beliefs.
Dear God, we confess.
Televangelist Paula Whitecain is glamorous, controversial.
Because of your giving, you made a huge impact in life today.
And Donald Trump's choice to lead the nation in prayer at his inauguration.
Is it accurate to describe you as Donald Trump's spiritual advisor?
Other people have put that label on. I would never say that about myself, but have I had a spiritual position and role in Donald Trump's life for 15 years? I have.
Did you bring Donald Trump to Jesus?
I've laid out the gospel very clearly, and I know that Donald is saved.
But Trump says he's never asked God for forgiveness.
I don't think so.
The first step to becoming born again. Trump says he's a Presbyterian, inspired by Norman Vincent Peale's The Power of Positive Thinking.
A vision for your career.
15 years ago, he saw White Cain on Christian television, intrigued by her message.
Find your passion in life and figure out a way to make money.
Critics say she preaches the prosperity gospel, emphasizing material riches over spiritual ones.
To click on that donation button by minimizing the screen.
Do you tell them that if they give to you, they will get financial riches from God?
Am I going to say, I have probably said that, okay, here's when I go, my 50-year-old self wouldn't do what my 20 or 30 or 40-year-old self did.
Twice divorced, now married to rock group Journey's Jonathan Cain, some evangelicals are casting stones.
And I will say this emphatically, absolutely 100% no basis to sit here and call me a heretic.
Are you a charlatan?
Absolutely not a charlatan.
Do you think this is because you're a woman?
Could be. Could be.
So today we pray for Donald Trump.
Yes. Critics notwithstanding, tomorrow she and Trump will have their biggest pulpit yet. Ann Thompson, NBC News, New York.
Up next, there is late word of a major development regarding one of the world's most infamous criminals. We'll be back. There is breaking news tonight from Mexico. Infamous drug lord Joaquin El Chapo Guzman is being extradited to face charges in the U.S. Officials say he's on his way to New York. The notorious cartel kingpin has twice made brazen prison escapes in Mexico and spent years on the run. That won't happen this time. El Chapo now in the custody of the DEA. After tomorrow, when President-elect Donald Trump takes the oath of office, he has no plans to give up his social media presence. He will keep his Twitter account, which he uses to speak directly to supporters, and launch salvos against critics. But as NBC's Hallie Jackson explains, being the tweeter-in-chief raises some unique security concerns.
It's a Twitter transition like never before. A big platform. And now, big bullseye.
All of those accounts are vulnerable to hackers, that account will be a high target.
Donald Trump's online voice, sometimes sarcastic, sometimes self-congratulatory, has seemed less predictable than, say, President Obama's, meaning a hacker could tweet something outrageous, but perhaps believable.
One tweet can move markets and start wars. So we have to be very careful that the account is secured.
So what steps should Trump take? Maybe two-factor verification, making it harder to sign in. Plus password security, like changing it often and using a unique one for each account. Still, nearly 7 in 10 Americans say they don't like Trump's use of Twitter. That apparently includes the future First Lady.
What's the one habit you wish he'd give up?
Retweeting.
Even the president-elect himself has reservations.
I don't like tweeting. I have other things I could be doing.
His own online megaphone. Unless, of course, you've been blocked by him, like high school junior Antonio Del Otero.
I call them a rejected Cheeto. It took off.
Trump will keep that personal account, and since President Obama's tweets will be archived under a new handle, POTUS44, Trump will take over the official POTUS account, too, with its nearly 14 million followers watching every word, 140 characters at a time. Hallie Jackson, NBC News, Washington.
Up next, he grew up without a father in his life, but he's become a father figure to so many in the White House. Finally, tonight, as President Obama prepares to leave the White House, he's written a letter to the American people, thanking them for making him, quote, a better man. In the past, he's also said the presidency has made him a better dad. And our Chris Jansing has a candid behind-the-scenes look at his legacy as a father and a father figure.
In the millions of photographs of President Obama, among the most memorable, as father-in-chief.
Every parent brags on their daughters. But man, my daughters are something.
A doting dad friend say, shocked at how quickly Sasha and Malia have grown up.
What's going to be harder, sending a daughter off to college or leaving the White House?
No comparison.
He lights up, not only with his own daughters, he finds joy in everyone's children.
And you sort of see that now with staffers bringing their children into the Oval Office for a quick visit.
Infants bring the leader of the free world to his knees, like Ella, daughter of the president's deputy national security advisor.
I've gotten more comments about that than anything I've done in this job.
He couldn't resist his press secretary's son dressed up as Superman.
That's you're so strong. You knocked me over.
He is somebody who cares about the people that he works with, and he cares about those families, and he's somebody who loves kids.
So many moments, there's a hashtag, Obama and kids.
I think it brings out who he really is.
The dad in him?
The dad.
A first meeting with the future King George. The boy who wanted to know if the president's hair felt like his. A free checkup and an Oval Office faceplant. The president who came to Washington with little girls, now leaving with young women. A man who barely knew his own father, with a legacy of being a great dad. Chris Chancing, NBC News, The White House.
And that's going to do it for us on this Thursday night. A reminder, I'll see you tomorrow morning for live coverage of the inauguration and then for a special one-hour edition of NBC Nightly News tomorrow night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.